Dr. Lemonet Tefel, an American emergency physician, assesses the patient.
To the Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, Frontline Reports podcast for September 2006. I'm your host, Martin Broughton. Today, we'll hear stories from the medical front lines in Haiti and Somalia. We'll also learn how MSF is bringing HIV/AIDS treatment to the most remote and mountainous areas of Lesotho. The AIDS pandemic has decimated this tiny nation, which is entirely landlocked within South Africa. But first, let's join Guillaume Leduc in Haiti's capital, Port-au-Prince, where violence has surged again after a lull following the country's elections in February.
Dominique is 17 years old. He's among the 50 patients now recovering at the MSF Rehabilitation Center in Port-au-Prince, the capital city of Haiti. He explains how he was hit by a stray bullet.
I was playing football. I'm good at football.
Dominique was playing football in one of the slum areas of Port-au-Prince. Suddenly, shooting broke out. It is unclear where the gunfire came from. What is clear, however, is that as Dominique was trying to run away, he fell to the ground.
I was hit by bullets in the legs. I want to go to school now, but I'm not sure if I can play football anymore.
Every day, MSF provides medical and surgical care to Haitians who, like Dominique, are victims of the urban violence in Port-au-Prince. Statistics from the four MSF medical facilities, where more than 300 Haitian and international staff work daily, testify to the level of violence in the city. Since December 2004, more than 2,500 gunshot victims have been treated by MSF teams. More than 2 years have passed since former President Jean-Bertrand Aristide surrendered power, and waves of violence continue to erupt sporadically throughout the capital. Jan Libesar, head of the MSF Trauma Center at St. Joseph Hospital, speaks about the latest wave of violence.
We were quite surprised when we saw that in June and July 2006, the caseload of gunshot victims increased again, because after the elections in February 2006, we thought that it would remain quiet for some time, and it did for 4 months. And then the end of June is starting to increase, to reach a very worrying level in July with 158 gunshot wounded that we received in our trauma center in Saint-Joseph Hospital.
In Cité Soleil, one of the many neglected slums of Port-au-Prince, MSF is running a health center providing 4,000 consultations a month. Loris De Filippi is the head of mission of this project. He talks about the problems faced by the population.
So there were two main problems. One structural, the people, they have no money, they are more or less all unemployed, most of them. And then the second problem was the violence between the armed groups and MINUSTA was increasing a lot till the election of the president, and then so, which is February 2006.
It's 10 a.m. at the St. Joseph Trauma Center when a male in his mid-20s is brought in the emergency room. He's unconscious and his legs are covered with blood. Dr. Lemonet Tefel, an American emergency physician, assesses the patient.
He has multiple gunshot wounds to his right thigh, his right lower extremity, and his left forearm.
He's operative anyway because he has two holes here. He has a gross deformation of the forearm. So at minimum, he's an orthopedic case. Maximum, he's an exploration and orthopedic case.
Meanwhile, in the operating room, Dr. Pradin, a Haitian orthopedic surgeon, is preparing to operate on another gunshot victim.
If you look at the x-ray, he was shot and the bullet fragmented. One fragment is located inside the knee joint and another by the kneecap tendon. But we need to verify that the wound is in fact intra-articular, so we will first perform a puncture to check that.
Beyond the violence, women of Port-au-Prince face another danger, dying during pregnancy and childbirth. In 2004, for every 100,000 births, 523 women died in Haiti, almost 70 times the rate in the United States. But in the last 2 years, the statistics in Haiti have probably worsened due to the increasing violence. In response, MSF has set up a 60-bed maternity hospital to provide care to the most complicated cases. Petra Reichner, head of this maternity, explained the focus of the program.
We target the most violent areas of Port-au-Prince because the people not only suffer of poverty, but also because of violence. And in these areas, most of the hospitals and health centers have closed, and the population has no access at all to health care. It's true that with the crisis Haiti is going through, many doctors are afraid of going into the sensitive areas because they're afraid of being kidnapped, they're afraid of being shot.
And for those people who have been caught in a crossfire, the wounds are not only physical. Through its rehabilitation center called the Yellow House, MSF has created a place for patients to repair the physical and the psychological scars they have endured, as Jan Libesar explains.
These people, they've learned that they won't be able to walk again for their whole life. That's a big need for psychological assistance, to make them accept that, to also be able to talk to their families, to make sure they understand that their life is not finished because they have maybe one leg less. We're trying to really to make sure that they still believe in something after the trauma they faced.
Lesotho has so few doctors and some of the world's highest prevalence rates of HIV-TB co-infection. That's the background against which MSF is attempting to respond to the AIDS epidemic there. Here's Jean-Marc Jacobs with a report from the project.
Lesotho, a landlocked nation of 2.2 million people, faces one of the worst AIDS epidemic in the world. One in four adults are living with the virus. To respond to Lesotho's HIV-AIDS emergency, Médecins Sans Frontières, in partnership with Scott Hospital, launched this year a care and treatment program in a rural health zone straddling Maseru and Mafeting districts. The area is home to 220,000 people, an estimated 60,000 of whom are living with HIV. At Scott Hospital and 13 primary care clinics, many of which are in remote mountainous areas, the program is treating nearly 500 people with life-extending antiretroviral therapy and monitoring the health of some 1,700 other people living with the virus just 7 months after launching clinical activities. The program works hand-in-hand with the existing clinic and hospital staff and relies primarily on a dedicated group of MSF-trained nurses, as Rachel Cohen, project coordinator, explains.
With 40 doctors in the entire country, it would be absolutely impossible to develop a doctor-centered sort of hospital-based approach, which is why we've made a huge priority out of training and empowering nurses to manage at the health center level, at the primary care level, everything from diagnosing HIV, staging patients, diagnosing opportunistic infections, treating opportunistic infections, and in fact initiating ARVs at the health center level.
A key part of ensuring that the program will eventually be able to function without MSF's presence is empowering nurses, says Rachel.
We've launched these mobile medical teams to be able to help and support the nurses, not to replace, and this is an important concept. We're doing lots of direct consultations with HIV-positive patients, but the principle here is not one of substitution or replacement. It's really empowerment and sharing of responsibility so that we empower those nurses to do it in the long run.
But the nurses cannot do everything on their own. That's why MSF is training people living with HIV/AIDS and community health workers as lay counselors to shoulder some of the nurses' workload, says Prunita Pillay, medical coordinator for the program.
We're trying to move into a system where we can have counselors help with the preparation of the patients so that the nurse is able to do clinical work. She's able to diagnose, she's able to treat, and she's able to prescribe.
MSF is also focusing a great deal on scaling up access to voluntary counseling and testing in health facilities as well as in the communities around the health centers, with the hope of increasing awareness of the treatment services available, as Dr. Pielo Letula explains.
So what we're hoping to see is a change in the spectrum of the patients we see. At the moment, we still see a lot of terminally ill patients who are not on treatment, who show up and some of them don't really even respond to the treatment anymore. We're hoping to have more and more people coming at an early stage, being picked up early and being put on treatment on time before they get very sick.
One of the most daunting challenges for the MSF staff in Lesotho is dealing with the high rates of tuberculosis among people living with HIV, as Rachel describes.
On Lesotho, we have twin epidemics. We've got an HIV epidemic and we have a TB epidemic, which are completely concurrent. And in fact, according to all the various international statistics, Lesotho has the highest HIV prevalence among TB patients, or the highest, second highest, I should say, co-infection rate. And so at the national level, what WHO says is that 76% of TB patients in Lesotho are also HIV positive, which means we have an enormous challenge, which I can't even begin to describe, of first of all making sure that all TB patients are routinely tested for HIV, and all HIV patients are routinely screened for TB, because TB is the number one killer of people with HIV in Lesotho, as in many other places, and a huge challenge of making sure that we are integrating HIV and TB services for the patients who are co-infected with HIV and TB. The number one problem we have with TB in HIV-positive people is that we don't have an adequate tool to diagnose it. The sputum microscopy is something that has been around for over 100 years and simply doesn't take into account the fact that it's difficult for HIV-positive people to produce sputum, and so they wind up turning out sputum negative when they have all the symptoms of TB, and it becomes a literal nightmare to be able to diagnose TB in those patients. And without diagnosing the TB, they just die of it. Even if you give them everything that you think you should to manage the HIV, they'll be killed by the TB in the end.
Coupled with the challenge of TB is the need for better tools to diagnose and treat children with HIV/AIDS. 10% of the people receiving antiretroviral treatment through the MSF program are children under the age of 14. But MSF would like to reach many more, including those under the age of 2. However, HIV rapid tests are not available to detect the virus in infants under 18 months old. So when MSF needs to test an infant, the blood sample must be sent to a national laboratory in South Africa for more sophisticated testing. The process takes up to 4 weeks, a loss of precious time for these children, says Rachel.
The real challenge is how to get the young ones, ideally those less than 18 months, because we know very well that half of children who are born with HIV will die before their second birthday. We have syrups which taste horrible that are very difficult for caregivers to to measure and administer to babies at home, and we need a just much simpler tablets or some other kind of formulation that is child-friendly that will enable us to treat kids.
Beyond the complexity of diagnosing and treating pediatric AIDS and people co-infected with HIV and TB, the lack of human resources in Lesotho poses perhaps the greatest barrier to increasing access to AIDS treatment. Currently, Scott Hospital has more than 25% of its nursing positions vacant. Many nurses are leaving the country for South Africa and the United Kingdom, where they can find better pay and benefits. For Rachel, a former leader of MSF's campaign for access to essential medicines, the challenge is daunting.
A lot of time in MSF fighting for access to medicines. I myself have spent a lot of time on that, fighting for access to diagnostic tools, fighting for a whole range of tools that will enable people to better meet the needs of patients. But if we don't have anybody to deliver those tools, we've kind of put ourselves in a corner. So we have to figure out a way to address the human resource crisis and treat it like the emergency that it is.
Fifteen years of civil war in Somalia has brought about a virtual collapse of public health structures and services. Unsurprisingly, the country has some of the worst health indicators in the world. More than 1 in 10 children dies at birth, and of those who survive, a quarter will perish before their 5th birthdays. Violence is so widespread, and the country's clan structure so complex, that few aid agencies choose to work there. But Somalia is a country in desperate need of this kind of assistance. Here's Aymeric Peguillon with a report from Dinsaw in the Bay region in central Somalia, where MSF runs a hospital.
Since 2002, Médecins Sans Frontières has been running a health centre in the town of Dinsaw, situated at the heart of the Bay region in south central Somalia. In spite of the recent efforts to bring peace to the war-ravaged country, insecurity levels remain extremely high, and civilians are struggling on a daily basis to access healthcare facilities. MSF is one of the very few organizations that have been able to work in Somalia and provide medical assistance to huge numbers of people in a country where healthcare provision is almost non-existent. On a recent visit to Dinsaw Health Facility, which has significantly increased its inpatient capacity over the last year, we spoke to Dr. Vincent Ochieng, a Kenyan medical doctor and surgeon who has been working at the health center for almost 1 year. He described for us the challenges he faces on a daily basis.
As you know, there's always ongoing conflict here in Somalia. So most of the trauma patients that require life-saving surgery, I'm able to perform most of the surgery right here. Basically, we receive patients who have various ballistic injuries. This includes bullet injuries from high-caliber rifles, handguns, pistols. We do the life-saving surgery here, and then if the patient requires more surgery, then we refer to the ICRC hospital in Mogadishu called Medina. Most patients come from within the district, but from time to time we receive patients from as far as 200 kilometers. Most patients come in a poor general condition. Basically, my role is not just limited to doing the actual surgery. My role also entails getting proper history about the type of injury, the kind of conflict that was involved, because even operation here is a sensitive issue. And it's not just a straightforward matter of getting the patient and operating. Most important is that we have to get informed consent from the family. This basically means the father, the uncles, and the brothers. And at times, the clan have to give consent. Without the consent, we cannot do anything for the patient.
In Dinsaw, MSF addresses a number of other medical issues. The treatment of tuberculosis and the assistance to pregnant mothers who face difficult deliveries have been identified as the main priorities. Fatuma Gedi is a Somali-Kenyan nurse and a midwife who has worked at the Dinsaw Health Center for more than 2.5 years. We spoke to her just before she left Dinsaw on September 2nd and asked her about what has been accomplished since 2004.
When I came, there was no TB program. The one we implemented, and we have covered a very big number of TB patients. We started with 2 or 4 September with 17 patients, and now I think we are around 550 patients. Already now we have 250 currently on lots. So we are seeing more mothers are coming to us. I'm sure if we get this new theater renovated and we get a separate delivery room, my feeling is that we'll have more mothers coming to deliver in the hospital, because right now we have a very small theater where we have the delivery bed, and it's not a very private place.
Fatuma also commented on the necessity and the benefits of health education in the communities.
Through the health education and through messages passed to these people that they know MSF is present in Dinsaw and we are offering free services in discrimination of anything. I mean, they are, at any time they come, they get the services. In fact, the health center is not offering the service to only Dinsaw people. We're even getting people from outside the region of Bai.
For MSF, there is no real question about the necessity to work in Somalia. Christophe Van Hoof, a Belgian national, has been a field coordinator in Dinsaw for the last 6 months. We caught up with him and asked him about the difficulties to work in a highly insecure environment.
It's a difficult environment to work in, but I'm convinced that as long as we keep open communication with the whole community, it's quite easy to work. Even if you meet difficulties on a daily basis, they're small and they can be solved quite easily. For me, it's a very worthwhile program that we're running here. If you look at Somalia, you don't even ask the question, is there something we can do? Wherever you go, you see immediately, okay, if we would stay here, there's a project we can run. There's a complete lack of healthcare all over the places where we go. And I think for MSF, it's extremely important to be present in Somalia.
Thank you for listening to the MSF Frontline Reports podcast for September 2006. Médecins Sans Frontières, or MSF, is an independent medical humanitarian aid organization that delivers emergency assistance to people affected by wars, epidemics, and natural or man-made disasters in more than 70 countries around the world. For more information about these stories, as well as updates on other underreported humanitarian emergencies, please visit our websites, either at doctorswithoutborders.org or msf.org. And don't forget to listen to MSF Voice podcast, also available at msf.org.